Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. What's in a name? Meet Hera Navasordian, who shares the same first name as the Queen of the Gods in Greek mythology. This Hera has spent just about all her life in the fashion and beauty industry. At 21, she began working as a model in New York City for Bob Mackie, Jeffrey Bean, Zandra Rhodes, and many other designers. During her 30-plus years in the business, Hera has also worked on the other side of the camera as a makeup artist and stylist for Estee Lauder, Chanel, and Creed of London. In 2008, her passion for beauty and fashion led Hera to Provincetown, Massachusetts, where she established Climax Unlimited, her own accessories boutique and transformation studio for women and men. It's there she offers makeup, image style consultation, skincare, hair and wig styling, as well as costume creation and composition through workshops, seminars, and private consultations. This includes working with the LGBT community. Hera says her greatest passion has been and continues to be her association with the Fantasia Fair, an event now in its 40th year that features 350 cross-dressing and transgender attendees from all over the world. And in 2012, Go Magazine named Hera one of the 100 women we love. Hera, welcome. I have a feeling that by the time this conversation is over, plenty of women are going to love you, right?
I hope so.
So the first line of the Go Magazine profile reads, Hera Navasordian was born for fashion. How come and why?
My mother was my influence. She was my idol and my hero. Single mother and only child, no siblings. I tended to lean towards my mother. She was my everything. Mm-hmm. And watching her doing what she used to do, because she was a opera singer for many years in the Boston Conservatory, she used to put on her own makeup, make her own gowns because she was a dressmaker, and she would perform as a mezzo-soprano. So watching this from a young age influenced
me. Every day was dress up.
Every day was dress up, and that's what we did together. So therefore, it's in my blood. You know, that's how it all started.
And so as you got older, logic sort of dictated, and I guess in addition to beauty and talent, that that was the road you were going to pursue as opposed to, you know, going to college and studying science.
Pretty much so. My mother wanted it that way. First, she thought I was going to be an airline stewardess when it was a prestigious thing to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. That didn't work out for me. And then she sent me off to modeling school many years ago when it was also prestigious, too, was Barbizon.
I mean, not everybody can be a model.
No, but I was tall. I was thin.
You're pretty.
I was pretty. Thank you. Thank you very much. And it just seemed like something to try. Because, again, when I use the word prestigious, it really was at that point in time. You had to have a certain look, a certain time. The one thing I will say that was a little difficult for me in those days, I am dark-haired with dark eyes.
And dark skin.
So did that
work against you, or did that make you kind of something that people would gravitate for because it was unusual?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, I saw that the market indeed loved blonde and blue eyes, you know. So my agent at the time, Vanderveer People it was, she took me on. She said, you're going to be different. Mm-hmm. And I was. If you looked at the whole headshots of all of the models at the time, I stuck out. And I did it. I enjoyed it. I loved it. It was rewarding. It taught me a great lesson in life.
What kind of a model were you?
Runway, photos, print ads, showroom mostly, a lot of showroom. So it was a little bit of everything as far as that's concerned.
It's lucrative, but it's also, not exhausting, but it's also incredibly hard work, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, for those of us looking in, it's not so glamorous, is it?
It's not. And now that they have all those great TV shows, you know, the next top model, you get a chance, if you're even interested, to see how these young women have to do what they have to do the way they have to do it, you know, and there's no room for boohoo or drama or anything like that. Not that that was part of my DNA anyhow. Mm-hmm. You know, I just loved anything and everything they threw at me. So I embraced it. I loved it. I did it for as long as I thought I could. And then I moved on to the next chapter because, you know, sooner or later that ends.
You know, that's kind of funny. One has no control over that.
I know.
They tell you, you're done, Hera, you know?
I felt I was done. I was approaching my 30s. And for me, that was the next phase of my life. And this is something that sooner or later, nowadays it's different. Women can still model in their 60s. I mean, we have great models still out there. But in those days, you had to be young, fresh, new. So before they said bye-bye, I said bye-bye.
And what about the whole body image thing? Were you anorexic?
No. No, I was just very lucky. I exercised. I have been ever since then. I ate properly. You know, my mother being Middle Eastern, we didn't have frozen foods. We didn't have candy or chocolates or anything like that. Everything was fresh and green. So, you know, it's – and also my genetics. You know, my mother and father were strong, healthy, beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
So I inherited all of that, and I was not anorexic. To me, as a matter of fact, all of that is – it goes against my grain.
So when you knew that it was time for you to get off the runway, so to speak, and move behind the cameras, what did you think you were going to do?
I knew that I had enough talent at the time that I could walk into any kind of an agency, tell them that, you know, I know what it was like to be on the other side, so I have enough experience and education to put me on the other side of the camera, which when I went to John Casablancas, they hired me as a booking agent.
Now, that's a modeling agency.
Yes, it is. It was, at the time, one of the top three.
Along with Ford, right?
Yes, and Elite, of course.
Right.
You know? So it was wonderful. It was exactly what I wanted to do at the time. I had a sitting job. I got to interview. I got to work with women and men who were getting ready for photo shoots, getting ready for runway. So I taught classes for them on skincare at that time because of what I used to do. I know. And I started at the age of 16 taking care of my skin and my body.
So it was just a very natural progression.
Very much so.
So then what happened after that?
Well, that became a little boring,
uh-huh.
You know.
Not
after
nearly
a while.
As glamorous?
It was glamorous because I made other people look beautiful. I was their stylist and their makeup artist. So every time they did a runway show, I was behind the scenes getting them dressed, putting them on the runway, getting their hair done, doing their makeup, putting their clothes together as a stylist. So it was exciting. And I won't say that I get bored easily, but I want challenges in my life. So that challenge was over and done with. So I moved on. And at that point, then I started to go to the big companies and Chanel, Creme de la Mer, Creed of London, all of these different companies throughout Bergdorf, Barney's, Saks Fifth Avenue, Henri Bendel's. These are the places I went to because, again, today's venue is so different than it was back then. Back then, you didn't do emailing resumes. You walked in and you showed yourself and you presented yourself.
To do what?
Becoming a makeup artist for the companies, being skincare analysis.
Working in the store?
Yep. Yeah.
And that was, I use that term in quotes, glamorous?
It was to me.
To be a makeup person at Bergdorf's?
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yes, it was.
So it's not that you worked for Chanel at Chanel's headquarters.
I had launched one of their greatest perfumes that is out now called Les Exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
So I launched their perfumes. I worked with fragrances. I brought it to America and worked with that. I brought it into Bergdorf. So to me, it was, again, a challenge, something entirely new. And I admire and I love Coco Chanel.
Mm-hmm.
Her whole life story to me is very inspiring. So to bring this new line and every bottle of that particular fragrance has something to do with her life. The names of the fragrances, the titles, has something to do with her life. So to me, again, this was a challenge. Nobody knew it. People were coming from all over. Being a resident makeup artist for Estee Lauder at Saks Fifth Avenue, when people came to me for me to do their faces, yes, it was quite, remember, I'm getting a little bit older now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit more comfortable.
More calming and maybe not as crazy.
And not as crazy and dealing with one client at a time, you know, and profiling them, working with them, selling them the products that I believe in. And that's the only way, including with my store, I've been as successful because every company I've worked for, I so believe and love their product. I loved Chanel and I loved Creme de la Mer, for instance. It was a miraculous cream that saved the creator's face, who got burnt in an accident. You know, so there's history.
Wow.
Yeah, that's Max Huber. He used to work for NASA. He was working on a project. The project exploded and burnt 3/4 of his face, from his chest up to his face. He went to every plastic surgeon. He went everywhere he could. No one would fix him. They said, there's nothing we can do for you. So for the next 12 years, converted his garage into a laboratory, and he started to brew a miraculous broth, they call it. It takes at least 3 months to make one batch of the cream.
And it's still on the market today?
Absolutely. Bigger and better than ever.
I forgot. I wanted to just focus on the fact that you were a Bob Mackie model at some point in this man. I mean, there was no name bigger than he in terms of Hollywood, you know, Cher, Diana Ross. What was that like?
Delicious. Absolutely delicious. I felt like $1 million. And this was actually in the fur industry, because for a short period, well, not even short, for a long period of time when I was modeling, I had gotten done with the clothes. And my agent, of course, said to me, I'm going to send you off. You have a go-see. It's in the fur industry. You're going to go to the showroom and you're going to, I said, I don't even own a fur coat. What do you mean showroom? She said, just go. You can do it. And so I went and I walked in. I was very intimidated.
How old were you?
Oh, God, 27, mm-hmm. 27, 20, and very glamorous showroom. So now, they're coming out, all the owners, and I was by myself. They brought over this beautiful, full-length ranch mink coat, put it on me and said, walk and show me what you can do. It was like as if it was hand in glove, Sandy. As soon as I put the coat on, I transformed
myself. I was just
going
to say, was it transformative?
It mm-hmm. was, mm-hmm. and I turned with it. I did everything they wanted me to do that was right. I was hired on the spot. So down the road, who does it turn out that the designer that I'm going to be working with, as far as production, as far as modeling the coats, as far as was Bob. So, you know, the first time I saw him, because again, back then I knew who he was. Now sometimes these young kids will say, Bob, isn't it a shame?
I know.
We shook hands, and for me it was love at first sight. He was kind and sweet, shy.
Not temperamental
and
stereotypical screaming and...
No, I worked for Michael Kors for a little while and Jeffrey Bean. And one of my favorite love stories about Jeffrey Bean is the fact that when we knew he was going to come to the showroom to visit us, they would send me out to go buy an orchid, because he had to be presented with an orchid at his arrival into the showroom.
Okay.
All right. So is Bob like that? Absolutely not. No. So, you know, it started then and it went on for years. Then, of course, you know what happened with the whole fur industry and
exactly.
the animal activists.
Exactly.
So many of the companies I had worked with and along with, they all went, some of them went down,
mm-hmm.
some of them downsized, but it took a big hit. And therefore, I decided, again, it's time to leave, you know?
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Hera Navasardian. Oh, yeah, how did you describe her? Former model, beauty and makeup artist, entrepreneur, and that's where we'll move now to okay. the fact that you opened up a store in Provincetown, Massachusetts called Climax Unlimited. How did that happen and why Provincetown?
As far as the name itself is concerned, at the time when I was still modeling in the fur industry, we would travel with the shows. So Canada was a very big place we'd go for an international fur exhibit. While I was there, I met up with a Canadian model who, you know, we just took like peas in a pod to one another. And she had taken my phone number and said to me, if I ever decide that I want to come into New York to visit, she said, do you think it's okay if I come? I said, absolutely. Again, young, single, living alone, why not? She was a doll. And she did. She called me and she came. Long story short, we were both still modeling together. Now she's in New York and she decides we're going to live together. Let's start a business together. Let's get out of this whole thing and let's start creating something that's unusual and glamorous. So they were bustiers. That's how Climax originated, probably in 1990 or so. So we started buying all of these bras. We bought machines. We worked at home. We created. She sewed. I sold. I went everywhere.
So you're selling bustiers in the 90s.
In the 90s, beautiful, with accompanying jackets, all kinds
of things.
Like
out of your apartment.
Out of the apartment, in a bag, going to boutique
God,
to boutique.
You have a lot of chutzpah and self-confidence, don't you?
I do.
So it takes off?
It takes off.
You're not farming this out to a factory.
Nothing.
The two of you, like
two.
Cinderella in the back room. There.
Yep. Okay. All night, all morning, hours and hours. But at that time, it was ours.
Well, also, you made money.
We made money.
And you had seed money for this.
Absolutely. And
sure.
We were young. And
okay.
We were strong. And we had stamina. We could stay up late. And I started one night a week. On a weekend, on Sunday, I started selling my line with her in a crazy place that no longer exists. It was Limelight. It was a famous discotheque.
Yes, in New York City, of course.
Which was a church that got converted into a nightclub, and Sunday night was rock and roll night. So we were back in those days. We were like rock and roll chicks. So we'd wear the bustiers. We'd bring a table. We made our sign. We'd put them there. So as people were walking in and out, we had jeans that were studded with Austrian crystals, fringes, everything hot, unusual, and affordable.
But were bustiers new back then?
Yes.
So you were innovators?
The type of bustiers we were making, because these were all handmade. And I wish I even brought you a portfolio of some of the pictures.
What did they sell for?
The most expensive was probably about $450.
You've got a table at the Limelight Disco.
On Sunday night.
And women are stopping by?
Men are stopping by because we had denim jackets that were studded. You know, we had all it was a little bit of something for everybody.
And
we
you
had
sold
jewelry.
Out.
We sold out. We made money. We were kicking. She and I were both sitting down having a glass of wine. That's how we get the most creative. And we came up with the name Climax, but K-L-Y-M-A-X-X. So it had a little twist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the name that I carried with me. I kept that name forever. I, you know.
Berided it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, that part of our life moved on. She moved to California. I kind of let that go, so on and so forth. And, of course, to Provincetown I come.
But what drew you to Provincetown? I mean, Provincetown, which is a you know the furthest point on the Cape.
Absolutely.
And it's a beautiful town, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It's just fabulous. But it's a largely gay community.
Absolutely.
So what attracted you to Provincetown?
Truth be told, all those years when I was working in Saks Fifth Avenue and Bergdorf Goodman, fragrance and cosmetics, the majority of the men that I associated with were all gay.
Of course. Well, not of course.
And,
but,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No. And, you know, love them. I still know them. They're in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And every time vacation time came, they'd be saying, come on, Hera, come with us. We're going to P-Town. You know, it's beautiful. It's this. It's that. And I said to them, I work with you all day. I work with you every week. Why would I want to go to a gay place with you again? I said, no. So I didn't go. Now, friends of mine, we decide we're going to take a road trip. We're going to go out to Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to Hyannis, something I had never done.
We want to see the Kennedys.
Yeah, we want to do that kind of schmaltzy stuff. So we go. We spend one day in Hyannis, all is well and good, and then we're driving, and there's Chatham, the sign to
mm-hmm.
Chatham.
Very family-oriented.
Beautiful.
I've been there. Mm-hmm.
Or Provincetown. And one of my friends who still lives with me to this day, I've known him for 35 years. I call him my gay husband, David. He's in the back seat, and I go, Provincetown. He goes, oh, no, we're not going to Provincetown. He says, I was there once 25 years ago. He goes, I hated it. He was Fire Island, man. So anyway,
okay.
I see the sign, and I turned around. I looked at him. I said, I'm sorry. You're gay. We're going. And off to Provincetown we go. We find a hotel room right on the ocean. I wake up in the morning. I open up the doors. There's a pool underneath. They're drinking. The music's going on. Everybody's having a great time. So for 1 year in 2007, after falling in love, and that's what I did, anywhere I went in P-Town, everyone I met was so embracing to me and so loving. I thought to myself, oh, my God, I feel like a big fish in a small fish bowl here. Where in New York, obviously, I was a small fish trying to still do it every day, every day. You know, and I did. I did it for 40 years. I said, wow, this is pretty special, you know. So we vacationed for 1 year, every chance I got. I was still working for Chanel in New York, and I was going there on weekends, long holidays. And then, unfortunately, I had to have surgery. While I was healing and I had some time off from work, I was laying in my bed for the first time for 2 weeks on medical leave. And I had never had that kind of time off. I can't remember how long. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? You're in your 50s now, woman. You're at that crossroads. And the time has come for one more change. I didn't want to go back. And let me tell you something, Sandy. I had everything and anything Chanel could offer. I was covered medical, all kinds of perks.
You could have coasted.
Oh, absolutely. When people heard what I was going to do, they were like, are you crazy? You're going to give all of that up in this economy in 2008 to do this? None of it bothered me. I think the universe actually opened up its heart and doors because everything fell into place so beautifully like a puzzle. It was unbelievable. So I'm laying in bed and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what I really want to do, but I know what I don't want to do. And I picked up the phone, I called Human Resources, and it was maybe about 3 days before I was supposed to go back after medical leave, and I told them, this is time for me to go. Thank you so very much for giving me the opportunity to have my own counter, to do what I did, but I have to go. And, you know, they were very kind and generous, so I left. Now, mind you, I still don't know what I'm going to do, but I thought to celebrate, we're going to P-Town.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we did. And there was a little small store that had a for rent sign on it.
The stars were aligned, huh, Hera?
The stars were aligned, Sandy, and that was the beginning of a beautiful, encompassing journey that I'm still on to this day. And because I lived in New York City and with all my gay friends, I used to get involved with the gay and lesbian community, and I would do shows, and I would do things, and my makeup, and so on and so forth. So I thought, you know what? Provincetown. I mean, I knew by that time, because I'd been there for a year, they have shows and entertainment and drag and all kinds of events. And I looked around, there wasn't one makeup store in all of Provincetown, and that kind of like, I was like, this is godsend. I said, I'm going to open up a makeup store. That little store got rent paid before I even opened the door for 3 months until I realized this is too small for who I am and what I want to do. I need bigger and better. So I found another store through a friend who opened up the doors and said, how could you open up a store that's tiny? Let me show you what I got. I opened the door. I said, this is mine.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Hera Navasardi, a former model, a makeup artist, a stylist, and quite an entrepreneur. And we're talking about her store in Provincetown called Climax Unlimited. So you find this space, you breathe new life into the store, and you decide that you're going to focus on makeup mostly?
Makeup mostly, but I had an opportunity to do something a little bit different. And the store is actually, well, the sign says makeup, cosmetics, skincare, handbags, wigs, and much, much more. But it's a transformation studio. And you ask, what's a transformation studio? Obviously, it's what the word says. I take people, whatever gender they may be, and whatever their desires may be, and I transform them. So I have all the accoutrements that they need actually in the store waiting for that to happen.
So it begs the question, is a large part of your clientele, for example, men who are transitioning or transgendering into women?
Yes.
So you must really be one of a kind then, aren't you?
I hope so.
So talk to me about that part of the business that so-and-so Bruce Jenner comes in.
When we talk about Fantasia Fair, okay,
yes.
There's anywhere from 300 to 400 people, 450. They come from all over the world. They're cross-dressers,
mm-hmm.
which, again, is different than a transsexual.
Right.
Nowadays, it's not just gay and lesbian. There's so many adjectives
yes.
to describe. But it is predominantly cross-dressers and transgender people. So I have seminars. I thought seeing them, being with them, knowing them even in New York, there was something that was a missing link for them. They had the desire. They knew that something was up. But how to put all of this together was probably one of the most difficult things for them,
mm-hmm.
because the only person that they could reflect on, first of all, you have to understand, a lot of it is secret.
Of course.
A lot of it is hidden, okay?
And painful.
And so where do they go to actually ask someone in the know, can I wear this skirt with this blouse?
And feel comfortable asking
And looking
person.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
They have a wife now. That might be good and bad. A lot of these people, you know, my friends, their wives have rejected them or turned their back on them or said, listen, if that's what you're going to do, do it on your own and leave me out of it. Because a lot of this happens late in life as well. Now we have younger people that are coming out, okay? But like the Bruce Jenners of the world, and a lot of my clientele is like that, they've held this in for so many years. So tell your heterosexual wife now, all of a sudden, after 25 years and maybe two children, that you have a desire to either be a woman or dress like one. Very difficult, extremely difficult. I wanted them to have a place that made them feel safe, secure and comfortable, and that they respected and trusted my knowledge. And so that's what I started doing with them. I gave them a place to come where they had their wigs, their makeup, their clothes, their accessories, the jewelry, the handbags, and I would
teach. And the validation.
Absolutely. With no judgment, unconditional love, because I really do firmly, absolutely, positively, definitely feel this in my heart. Because the reward that I get, as corny as this may sound, is so immense. The love that they give back to me. And I travel with my company to different locations where they have these conferences, you know, for a weekend. And I bring Climax with me there. Okay, because we have a room for vendors, whether they're plastic surgeons or dentists, for people to go through those transformations and transitions. So I bring Climax and I provide a different service mm-hmm. for them. So when they're with me in Provincetown, we have 1 week in October every year, 40 years in the making, that's called Fantasia Fair. We're providing them with a fashion show, banquets, award dinners.
Who is them? Are you talking about transgender or cross-dressing men?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Both.
All right. Go ahead.
And because it is an organization that has been in the making of 40 years, they have their presidents and vice presidents. And
they have
so
a track record.
Absolutely. A beautiful one. And they have been coming to Provincetown for 40 years because it's the only place that would accept them. When this is happening to them, they rely on each other. Maybe they'll get together in somebody's house for one night. Maybe they'll be able to talk to their wife eventually. But who's going to guide them and teach them that, you know what, you don't wear that striped skirt with a polka-dotted blouse
mm-hmm.
and wear all your gold and silver jewelry with a little pink headband in your hair? Because then they become garish. And that's not what they want.
They want to blend in.
They want to do the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
So why not me? I can teach. I can do all of this. I've done the makeup. I've done the runway. I've done every aspect. So now you walk into this beautiful store, which visually it's like a child being in a candy store.
I can't believe it, Hera, but I knew it. We've run out of time.
That's quite all right.
But it's been such a pleasure to get to know you. And it sounds
same here.
Like Climax is just such a labor of love and provides such a, I'm going to use this term, public service.
It is.
Despite the fact that it's a business. So it's wonderful.
It's a business by name, but people come there not for, they come there for me.
Well, it's your passion also.
They
and
come
what,
from
what
me.
A great marriage for you.
It
you
is.
Know?
It is. And I have developed some wonderful friendships. We travel together now. You know, some of my friends from Fantasia Fair will meet each other, you know, in different places. We'll go and do different things. They'll come to see me in New York, you know. And believe it or not, I really want to reach out to Bruce Jenner.
Ah, well,
I really do. I have his agent's phone number.
Well, there you go.
And I, because I feel for him.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the interview.
Sure, it was huge.
It was huge.
I mean, it got tremendous traction.
And it's very familiar to me what he's going.
I bet it is. Well, Hera, you'll come back and you'll talk to us about that.
I promise.
if that relationship should take off.
I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it does.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Hera.
My pleasure, Sandy. Thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.